Hey, good morning, Jacksonville. Welcome in, Jaguars, today live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks along as well. Glad you're with us today on this Tuesday. Bye week blues in the rearview mirror. Jags get ready for the Indianapolis Colts. Loggy, how many of God's creatures gave up their lives at your hands?
To feed me?
Yes, over the last few days, huh?
It was great. I actually played the role of guide a little bit, and there are three tender venison platters ready to be made.
Well, there you go. I was going to say, so what's in season right now? Obviously, deer would be in season.
No, deer season's in, and that's, the month of November is absolutely magical when it comes to, a deer hunter. It's typically represents the rut, which is the breeding season, which we all know how men can act sometimes when they are pursuing females. Sometimes they don't think straight. The bucks, which is a lot of the hunters are after, they're a little bit more careless, so in the month of November. Now it's different. The state of Florida actually has different time periods where their rut is at, which is what it's called. The breeding season is called the rut. And even like over in the panhandle of Florida, it's typically late December and January. And middle Georgia, where I hunt at, is typically the first couple weeks of November. So it's different in different places.
All right, let's,
but it's a magical time of year, Mike.
I can tell by the twinkle in your eye.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Tony, did you know that the rut was in full bloom right now?
I had no idea.
All you have to do, literally,
we learn every week.
Listen to the outdoor show.
That's right.
If you ever took a road trip to go and watch college football, if you took a road trip in the first couple weeks of November to anywhere, in the SEC's range, you will start to see a lot of dead deer on the road. And the reason why is because of the rutting activity where the bucks, the males, are chasing the females. And
they don't look left, right, left.
They don't look left, right, left. So that's where and one of the greatest allies to the hunting industry is the insurance industry because of the number of vehicle deer collisions.
Huh.
It's actually one of the greatest allies for the hunting industry.
I told this story once a long time ago, Mike's Wild Florida, back in the day. This is, 3 years ago. I don't know what time of year it was, so I can't tell you if it was during the full-blown rut or whatever. But I'm driving down State Road 207, right there where it connects with 95, and getting on, coming to work. And his deer darts out right in front of my car.
What time of year was this?
I don't know. I can't tell. It was like 10 in the morning, though. It was broad daylight. And it was like four lanes of traffic with a median, So it comes tearing from across the other side of the highway, manages to avoid everything. There's like a culvert, like a runoff by the side of the road, and it runs down into it at a full gallop, whatever you want to call it, and just comes tearing ass up the other side through the parking lot. There's a gas station there, right? And it is running like straight for the glass door. Like you can't see what's going on. It runs in there. And if my memory's correct, it like kind of hits the glass door, turns around, jumps on a car, and just tore the crap out of the back of this car, and then just took off, around the building.
Yeah.
Sound familiar or reasonable?
Yeah, that could be this time. I know that, for example, a friend of mine is up in the woods, and he texted me yesterday or called me yesterday, and he said, man, he said, it was unbelievable. He said, because a doe or a deer is much like, a dog, a little different, but the female comes into estrus, and then she's ready to be bred. And so all these guys, when she gets to that point, they're just like, gotta have you.
Right.
And so yesterday morning, he said it was the most incredible sight. He must have had a doe in estrus close by because there's like four guys, four bucks just chasing that poor female.
Just going nuts.
Yeah.
Wow. Good times for the deer hunters among you out there. What about the news of the story of Dwayne Grotz? What's your initial impression of what went down, in South Florida over the bye weekend?
Well, part of me as a 47-year-old father says, come on, let's be responsible, and the position that you're in, you have to be able to manage yourself in high regard. But I'm not so idiotic that I don't remember when I was 23, 24, 25, 21, 18, and there's certain things that you did that you probably regret. And for me personally, a lot of things that I did that if I had gotten seen it probably wouldn't have been as good for me, you know. So it's a growth process, and the young man Dwayne Gross, and I like Dwayne. I mean, we had him right here.
Sure, absolutely.
And we like him.
Seems like a great guy.
He's a professional guy. Made a mistake, and he's going to learn from it. But we've all made mistakes, I think, at that age. And if everybody could say that, hey, look, that's terrible. They're paying him a lot of money, and you know, how can you do that and put, you know, your career at risk? I mean, come on. You know, when you're 21, 22, 23, 24 years old, are you really thinking about the big picture?
Well, look, I'm glad it's a story of him trying to buy something with bubble gum.
I think it's classic.
As opposed to getting behind the wheel of a car. You know what I mean?
I think it's awesome because, you know what? What's the old necklaces that we used to wear that had the candy?
Yeah, those are disgusting. I know what you're talking about. I never ate them.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do know what you're talking about.
I'm thinking of buying a couple of them, and then me and him can have like a barter system. You know, he's going to give me gum, and I'll give him some of those pieces of candy. Tony and I were talking about the exchange rate
this morning. If I brought in a bag of Big League Chew right now, how many Bazooka Joes could I get for that? I think that's probably like at least 10 Bazooka Joes.
I think it's great, though. I mean, just that part of the story is great.
Right.
Why? Because when he goes into that locker room, do you have any idea how much grief that he's going to get with packs of gum?
Oh, it's got to be for the rest of his career.
Right, the rest of his career, but certainly
the rest of the season, he's going to be inundated.
So it's going to be a constant reminder. In fact, you know, Indianapolis fans are just so tame, it won't happen. But, you know, if all of a sudden the Jaguars are going to Philadelphia or New York, you know what people are going to be doing? They're going to be throwing sticks of gum at him.
Right.
You know, when he gets to the stadium. I mean, having that side of the story, which can be very embarrassing, I think makes it perfect, and it makes him realize that, look, I messed up. But it also makes the locker room have fun with him and to be able to criticize him, but at the same time having fun with it.
Right. Look, that did make it funny. You couldn't help but laugh when you heard he tried to buy something with gum. At least I couldn't help but laugh. But
I can honestly say that I never tried that. And I made a lot of mistakes and things that probably I would like to redo.
Jerky? You seem like a guy who might try to buy something with jerky.
I probably would have tried jerky. Either that or other things.
A dip, maybe. Who knows what he's got. A can of Copenhagen or whatever your brand happens to be. The real issue, I think, we've talked about this, Tony, how many times over the years that because it comes up, I don't know how often, but When the officer says, time to go, just go.
Sure.
You don't win the argument. And if he had just done that, if he had just left, he wasn't trying to steal anything. He was creating a public scene, basically. Yeah. And they give him every opportunity to walk away out of the situation. There's got to be one sober cell in your brain that tells you to take advantage of that.
Let me go back, okay, and reference one of the all-time great comedians that there is, Mr. Ron White, when he was inebriated and he said the officer asked him to be quiet, and as he said at that point, he says, what did he say exactly? He said, I didn't have the ability to keep quiet at that point. You know, I had the right thought, but I didn't have the ability to keep quiet at that point. And it goes back to when he was talking about tater salad. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember that skit that he had?
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious. I mean, so, you know, I personally, there's people react to alcohol in different ways. And the unfortunate thing about this is that the league is probably going to get involved in some way, shape, or form. And that they got to have a reaction. Because, I mean, a lot of people now expect the league to have a reaction to every mistake that a young player makes.
Right.
And in this case, I mean, if you're the league, do you really feel like you need to react? Or is this something that it's a young man who made a mistake and he's going to learn from it, and do they really need to do anything about it?
I mean, this is not a case of violence or anything like that. Or he wasn't committing a crime outside of the disturbing of the peace aspect of it. But the book, by the way, is I Had the Right to Remain Silent, but I didn't have the ability. I just had to Google it because I have no idea who Ron White is. But apparently,
you don't know who Ron White is.
You and Tony are
like
been
this living in a closet.
You haven't seen the tater salad.
No, I have not seen. I'm sorry, I haven't seen.
I wanted
the
to get drunk
salad.
At
all.
I want everybody right now to tweet Mike Dempsey.
I'm looking at a picture of the guy, and I've never seen the guy in my life. Never seen him in my life
because he's never seen or heard Ron White.
No. Never seen or heard Ron White. I'm not afraid to admit it either.
Sorry. Now, let me ask you another question.
I'm sure tater salad have is the height of comedy, but I missed.
Have you ever heard of Roy D. Mercer?
Doubt it.
You gotta be kidding me.
Not that I'm aware. What do you think by now? You and I don't have a whole lot of the same cultural touchstones in our lives, man. Roy D. Mercer. I'm looking at him right now.
I'm looking at Mike. Hey, Mike, do I know you?
No, not well. I mean, you really don't. On. You thought you did. Man, is that, well, all right.
Roy D.
No, I'm looking at him right now. Never heard of him, though. Roy D. Mercer. And
do yourself a favor.
He's a crank call guy. Is that what he is?
Do your, and in radio. I mean, I mean, I think you would know. Do yourself a favor and just sit back one day and listen to some R.D. Mercer. And then also
R.D.
You got to.
Right. Well, see, now you said R.D. Mercer. I would have known exactly who you were.
Yeah. And listen to Ron White, that skit, the tater salad.
Get me that tater salad skit, someone, please, and we'll get that right to my ears as soon as possible. All right.
How big a boy are you?
Is this a reference? I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I wanted to be drunk in a bar. I got thrown into public. It's
Ron White.
Great bit.
It's awesome, man.
All right, you guys talk amongst yourselves.
But R.D. Mercer is always one of his famous lines when he crank calls. You know, he tries to get people all, you know, hot and bothered.
Sure.
And then at the very, you know, he kind of threatens physicalness, and he says, well, how big a boy are you? You know, when he's trying to see if he's measuring
right,
well.
He wants to know if he picked on the right guy. Yeah. I got you. All right, hilarious. Comic stylings of Roy D. Mercer, some may know him as R.D. Mercer. Check him out. He's out there at Amazon.com and other fine outlets.
Oh, YouTube, it's all over
YouTube. Oh, I'm sure. I'm just kidding. I'm looking at it right now. All right, coming up, if you want to talk about Dwayne Grotz and that situation, you're certainly welcome to 641-1010. Dwayne Grotz, as Jeff said, will not hear the end of that for a very, very long time in the locker room.
Bubblegum Grotz, it rolls too well.
It really does. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. That's going to take off. Whether that, you know, I think they might even, will they try to be more subtle, or will they just be like one day we come to his locker and there'll be a mountain of gum, or will it vary day to day?
I think it'll vary. I mean, some days it'll be, you know, just individuals doing
it. Some day I'll open up the playbook, there's some fruit stripe, you know, whatever the case may be.
Well, and the other thing is that because this is a very young locker room, that I'm sure that it will be relatively mild, but I'm sure there's a group of veterans, Senderek Marks, Chris Clemens, Red Bryant, that will have a lot of fun with Dwayne Grotz.
Well,
in this instance.
We'll keep an eye out for
that. I just know, as a veteran, if I was in a locker room and I was a veteran guy and I had a young player that had this happen,
they never hear the end of it.
The gates are open.
Right.
And it's on.
All right. 641-1010. He's Jeff Loggeman. That's Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. The fan feedback spotlight today asks you this, courtesy of the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. Which Jaguar player this year has been the most underappreciated for his contributions to the team? We talk about some of the headliners a lot, but which player's play do you think has been the most underappreciated in 2014? You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, LOGS56, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren. Taking your calls with Professor Logman as well. Bye week's over. Jeff's been watching some film of the Jags' last performance and plenty of the indie film as well to get ready for this weekend's game against the Colts, who will be shorthanded with some key injuries coming down this past weekend against the New England Patriots. We'll get into all that coming up today. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today on this Tuesday. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. The heat is on. Glenn Frey, Loggy, any stabs at the musical theme right out of the gates?
I mean, if I had to guess, maybe the heat is on Dwayne Grotz right now.
I was thinking that the Miami Heat, which is where he was, arrested. So something along those lines, Lauren Brooks, or are we going somewhere else?
I just love how smart y'all think I am. No, that's not it.
Okay. It's not it. I told Tony, honestly, if the theme today wasn't bubblegum, then Lauren was missing a great opportunity.
Apparently, oh, I am.
So she may have a greater opportunity coming our way. Glenn Frey. Oh, wait a minute.
I don't think it's very fair, though, that you actually get to see the title of the song before we hear it.
But I tell you what it is.
No, I know, but that's the first time ever since we've been doing this.
I would have known that. Is that right? No, but I usually tell you as the music plays.
He's kind of like Alex Trebek, you know.
He knows the answers.
He gets a little snooty when he's, you know, when he finally figures it out, and he's had like 5 minutes to think about it, knowing the name of the song before we even hear it.
Well, I mean, that one was easy.
See, Lauren, you can't do that. You just got to let him hear it.
She knows.
He would never let
me. I would never get half of the songs that she plays unless she gave it to me. Have you heard of this comedian, by the way?
I've heard of Ron White. Absolutely.
This is Ron Fellow right here. Apparently
he's
all Twitter funny. Has as well.
He likes his drinks while he's on stage.
Oh, my God. His go back to his old stuff. It's better because it's clearly that the alcohol has affected him.
Really?
Yeah. Recently. Oh, yeah.
So, like, he is, like, a literal, like, sloppy drunk up on stage.
Oh, yeah.
If he's not drunk, he's one of the greatest actors I've ever seen.
Really?
At being drunk, yeah.
Huh.
I mean, he surpasses Otis from Mayberry, the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah. Otis, I never really bought Otis that much as, you know, mildly
intoxicated. I did because I've got a good friend of mine that acts just like that when he has a few drinks.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, just go sleep it off in the in cell number one. It won't be locked when you're done.
Yes.
Yeah. Good times with Mayberry. You know, I used to, on occasion, I'd like to tell people that the Andy Griffith Show was based loosely on the life of David Lamb. And,
is that right?
It's right that I would tell people that, but it's not right that it had anything to do with David Lamb.
So which character is David? Andy?
Yeah, I would guess something. I don't know, Andy or Opie or any of them. It doesn't really matter. Okay. Because he grew up in a small town in North Carolina. Yeah. And, you know, so for people who knew just enough about the backstory, it was, you'd be surprised. People will believe anything that comes out of your mouth on the radio.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, you're the gospel.
I don't lie about anything important. I just lie about all the unimportant stuff as far as that goes. What about the Colts? You've been watching them on film?
Yeah.
All right.
Big change of philosophy. I talked about this last night a little bit on Jaguars All Access, and that in the first part of the season, which, you know, when we get ready, or the Jaguars get ready, and we get ready to do a broadcast, and the Jaguars get ready for a game, you typically watch, you know, three games beforehand, and then sometimes the previous time that you've played this opponent. And so preparing for that Indianapolis game, you're watching the first, you know, three games of the season or whichever it was. And Indianapolis clearly had a philosophy on offense with Pep Hamilton that they were going to run the ball first and then throw it when they absolutely had to. And now it's completely different. And I don't know if you remember me talking about it at that time. I was very critical of Pep Hamilton. The best part of their offense is their young quarterback.
Sure.
And then the wide receiving core that they have with Reggie Wayne and T.Y. Hilton and Dwayne Allen, Kobe Fleener. But they never played to that strength. Now they are. They're coming out, spreading the field, and letting Andrew Luck do what he does best, which is throw the football, which is going to make it more challenging for the Jaguars. You know, because the secondary injuries that they've had with Alan Ball and Will Blackman, and who knows what's going to happen with Juicy Fruit.
You're going to have to stick to them.
Oh,
what?
You never know what's going to happen there. I mean, so it's going to be a challenging game because, you know, Andrew Luck is not as accurate as some other quarterbacks, but he's a special talent. I mean, he has the ability to extend the play. He's strong. He's got great pocket presence, maybe the best pocket presence in the game today next to Peyton Manning.
Well, when you say that, how does that manifest itself? You know, what do you see on film that makes you say he may have the best pocket presence in the league?
He's very similar, and Blake Bortles has a lot of these traits, in that when you watch Andrew Luck in the pocket, he never has to look anywhere to find where he needs to move in the pocket in subtle ways to buy extra time. And his eyes never leave down the field. His shoulders are always square. His feet mechanically are always sound, and he's ready to uncork a ball in a split second. And not all quarterbacks have that ability. Blake Bortles has the ability to feel it and slide, but his feet are still trying to figure out exactly where they need to be while he's buying that extra time in the pocket, which comes. You know, so that's what makes Andrew Luck special. The ability to extend the play, the pocket presence, got a very good arm. He's not the most accurate in the world. He's very accurate, but he's not the most accurate.
Yeah, and he can get rid of the ball while taking contact, much like, you know, the guy, Roethlisberger's the guy he's been compared to, you know, from that aspect
play. No, but very different. You know, Roethlisberger is willy-nilly, you know, does all these crazy
things. No, but I'm talking about just in the ability to absorb a hit and still deliver an effective ball. You got to bring the house to get this guy on the ground is my point. You can hit him
and not affect him
as much as some other quarterbacks.
See, you can't bring the house with Andrew Luck. The only way that you can really attack him, because the offensive line, I think with the exception of the left tackle, Anthony Costanzo, I think is just kind of average. But I think Costanzo is a very good player. I think he's really developed over the last couple of years, and this year he's taken a huge step up. But you got to rush Andrew Luck with four, because if you make the coverage delinquent, he's going to expose you.
No, I understand what you. I think I probably used the wrong term when I say bring. You've got to make sure when you hit Andrew Luck that you wrap him up and bring him down. My point being, you can hit this guy and he can still get off effective passes because of how big and physical
you have to have. He's probably one of the few quarterbacks in the league, with, you know, the other one being probably Cam Newton, that, you know, you hear Gus Bradley talk about tackling plan. And a tackling plan is for a guy that has the ability to break tackles. You need to know how to attack him. He's one of the few quarterbacks in the National Football League that you actually have to have a tackling plan going into the game, knowing what his abilities are.
I want to say his two leading receivers in terms of touchdowns are Allen and Bradshaw. Now, Bradshaw's done for the year. He's got a pretty significant fracture of his ankle, and I saw some speculation.
And how he walked off the field is pretty amazing.
Right, it is. And I heard speculation that he may not be ready even for the start of training camp next year. It's that significant and severe an injury. So
how do you walk off the sideline?
I don't know. Adrenaline, I suppose, right? But, I mean, I marvel at, we always cite, Tony and I over the years have cited the example of Olandis Gary. Remember for the Denver Broncos? Mm-hmm. He tore his ACL late in the first half of a game, played the entire second half, ran for like 80 yards in the second half.
Yeah, but see, that's
that
not that big of a deal, because, you know, when you tear an ACL, it's an incredible amount of pain for a short period of time, and then it goes away. Been there, had it in 1992, tore my ACL on the field of Three River Stadium, and I remember on the field, it was the most horrific pain I'd ever experienced in my life at that point. Come off to the sideline, and the doctors are checking it, and I got to the point where the pain was gone, and I was like, put some tape on it, I'm going back in.
Did you go back in?
No, they wouldn't let me.
Yeah,
I took my helmet away.
Just curious. They were like, back in the Stone Age. when you played.
No, they told me, said, look, you said you tore your ACL. And I'm like, come on. It doesn't hurt anymore. What are you talking about? You know, and that's the way it is. An ACL is not a big deal. But to have a fracture, I've had a fractured tibia before in
that
college.
That pain doesn't go away.
That does not go away at all.
When you're putting weight on it, particularly. The point being, Bradshaw's done for the year. Okay.
And he's their best running back by far.
No question. And he's a big part of their passing game in the red zone as well.
Short yardage back as well.
Dwayne Allen.
Goal line back as well.
Dwayne Allen scored touchdowns at a very high clip. I want to say like 7 out of 10 games this year, he's scored a touchdown.
He's the most complete tight end that they have. Kobe Fleener is, very soft as a blocker. Dwayne Allen is, he's probably along the lines of Mercedes Lewis in that he can do everything very well. The only thing he doesn't do great is run exceptionally well like Kobe Fleener can.
How much does it level the playing field or draw the Jags closer to a level playing field if these guys can't play? Because I know Dwayne Allen's saying he thinks he's day-to-day, he hopes to play. There were some reports that they thought it's a high ankle sprain. My guess now.
Well, they used the term mild, so I don't know.
Well, let's assume he's out, okay? If, in fact, he is out this weekend. And if he plays, then we'll see how effective he is. But if Allen is out, and we know Bradshaw's gonna be out, how much does that, draw the Jags closer to the Indianapolis Colts?
I think it draws them incredibly close. I mean, you're talking about the best blocking tight end. You know, one of the reasons why the New England Patriots were able to beat them is I think they had 17 or 19 yards rushing on 17 carries in the game against the New England Patriots. They had to be completely one-dimensional and allowed the Patriots to really kind of take control of Andrew Luck and corral him. And that's the only way that you can really handle Andrew Luck, is to make him one-dimensional. You know, if he has the ability to have a balanced offense, he's extremely hard to deal with play action, because he's very good at play action. And Ahmad Bradshaw, their best running back, also their receiver, their third down back, that's a huge weapon that's lost for them. And I remember earlier in the year talking about, why in the world are they not playing Ahmad Bradshaw as the starting running back? And now you know why. Ahmad Bradshaw has a history of injury.
He does.
Going all the way back to the New York Giants, and that's probably why they were not pressing him into that starting role, is because they wanted him for the long haul.
Right, they wanted
to
manage that
run.
Workload. Sure.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Because he's such a great player.
Now, you watched the film of the first game this year. It was 30-0 at the half for Indy, and then we saw the debut, of course, of Blake Bortles.
Mm-hmm.
But you said you didn't remember until you watched it again just how poor the tight end play was.
Oh, gosh.
For this football team, for the Jaguars in that game. And you're talking about Marcell Jensen.
Yeah, what week was that? The Colts game, was it three?
Three, yeah.
Week three. And so Mercedes got hurt the week before because of Cam Bradfield. I do remember that part of it.
I don't think Harbor was up yet. Right?
Harbor was down for like six games or whatever it was because of the high ankle, or out for 6 weeks because of the high ankle or calf. It was a calf with Clay Harbor. And so in that game, I remember they just recently acquired Mickey Shore
that
week. And then he was active on game day and playing on game day. And then Marcell Jensen, who they elevated off of the practice squad, was playing there. And Mickey Shuler was okay at best. And Marcell Jensen was horrific. Couldn't block you. If you put on pads today and went out there as a defensive end, he wouldn't have been able to block
you. Saying I got a shot.
You had a shot.
Excellent. but they get Mercedes back, obviously. They have a healthy Clay Harbor now.
Well,
so.
And the best part is that Mercedes has been ready to come back. You know, we talked to him last night on Jaguars All Access and you know, talked to Mercedes different times, you know, and got to watch him the week of practice out there in London. He looks fantastic. He's completely healthy. He's ready to rock. And then during the bye week, I was asking him what he did in the bye week. Cause, you know, most players in the bye week, they want to get away. And he's like, look, he says, you know, all my guys in the locker room have been playing. He says, I needed to utilize that week to get in better shape so that when I do hit the field in Indianapolis, that I'm ready to roll. You know, this is a huge boost for the Jaguars against an Indianapolis Colts defense that right now, is not playing very well. Now, I thought that they played exceptionally well after they played the Jaguars for a stretch run, and that defensively they were pretty good. But against the New England Patriots, against Jonas Gray. I mean, who's Jonas Gray?
Yeah, the color, you're in the color family, so you have that going for
that,
you.
That guy.
They also have James White on that team.
But. He absolutely dominated the Indianapolis Colts. And I was very surprised because the Colts have two inside linebackers that are usually pretty good. Jarrell Freeman and DeQuell Jackson. Jackson being the guy they acquired as a free agent from the Browns. They were terrible. Terrible in that game. And New England's not the most talented team in that center guard position. But they're solid. And they
made that
well
O-line
together.
Look like. I mean, they were on Sunday Night Football. They practically enshrined the whole group in Canton.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a dominant performance by the New England Patriots offensive line.
Can the Jags take advantage of that? I mean, will that be, in your opinion? I mean, well, Denard Robinson's been one of the most effective running backs in the league for the last
month. He's, what, 389 yards rushing in the last four games?
Right.
5.5 yards, nearly a carry.
You would think heavy dose of Denard and maybe a heavier dose than we've seen of Toby Gerhardt to, you know, just get a, you know, 30 plus carries in the running game.
The biggest thing though is that can you stay with that approach? You know, offensively.
Can you stay in touch with the score and you don't fall too far behind?
And that's, I think, at times this year, obviously early in the season, you haven't been able to be a team that's really tried to maintain as much balance as you would like.
Right.
The Cleveland game being a game that you really were able to keep your tempo the way you would like to have it because you were just so dominant on defense. Now, can you, you know, limit Andrew Luck, you know, game after he was very disappointed in his own performance? You know, that's going to be hard to
do. Again, with two of his primary guys not going to be there this week.
Yeah, but they still have T.Y. Hilton.
No, they do.
They still have Reggie Wayne.
They got Dante Moncrief, who's a hell of a talented rookie.
Well, and Dante Moncrief, it's interesting talking about Dante Moncrief, because I remember, you know, they have this thing that they do with analytics, you know, that I know that, like, Tony Khan and the group here with the Jaguars, they do the statistical analysis, and a lot of other people do that. You know, not a lot of people to do it to the level that they do, but they have something called
body mass index.
Well, it's not a body mass index. It's what they do is they take height, weight, size, speed, and then they kind of come up with a number, and then that number gives you a way to grade, you know, wide receivers or running backs, you know, and say, okay, in a comparative apples to apples situation. And Dante Moncrief has a number that's along the lines of a Calvin Johnson or a Julio Jones as far as height, weight, speed. I mean, he does have, but he's very raw. I mean, he's a young player.
Sure.
But you can see that they're trying to push him the ball on film. I mean, they want to feed him the ball as much as possible once they try to take the ball down the field. Dante Moncrief is a primary target.
All right, we'll talk more Jags-Colts coming up with Jeff Logman here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, 641. 1010 if you'd like to get in this morning with the professor. We've got Chris Wayne coming up. He's the events and marketing manager with the Tom Coughlin J Fund. We've got the J Fund Radiothon officially taking place next week, but we're on the drive to the Radiothon as we speak, and we will let you know how you can be there for a number of those families who've been affected by childhood cancer this past year on the First Coast, and it's an ongoing issue. So we'll talk with Chris coming up. Of course, Jeff's former producer on the Outdoor Show. I bet he knows exactly about the rut that the deer are in.
He knows about
right now.
The rut. He knows about Ron White, and I guarantee you he knows about R.D. Mercer.
Apparently, if you're going to work with Jeff Loggeman, this becomes a prerequisite at some point. I'm going to have to go do my homework on YouTube tonight. That's coming up here on this Tuesday. We're live at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Logs, what do you got? What's the name of the song? Since you don't want me to say anything.
Well, ZZ Top.
ZZ Top self-titled single, ZZ Top. Not it.
I don't know the name of
got
the song.
Me under pressure.
Okay.
Okay.
Heat pressure.
What was the first one? I wasn't in here.
Oh, The Heat Is On by Glenn Frey.
Oh.
So, yeah. Heat pressure. Got to win some games. I don't know.
Get after Andrew Luck.
Put the pressure on Andrew Luck, Warren.
They absolutely are going to have to put pressure on Andrew Luck to win. But, yeah, it's that they – I picked that they're going to win another game, so they got to find one to win. The pressure is on them.
Okay.
A little abstract.
Did that anyway fit the theme at all? All right.
Nope.
Moving along. I told you, Tony.
I know you.
If Warren didn't go with bubblegum or something close to it as the theme today, she was missing a great opportunity. So let's welcome
in. That would have been an obvious one.
I mean, what would have been an obvious one? I could use an obvious one. I'm actually on kind of a roll since we got back from London. I think that UK air cleared my brain a little bit. Chris Wayne is the marketing and events manager for the Tom Coughlin J Fund. He is the former program director of 1010XL. He is the former producer of the Outdoor Show, which
that's
he may be best known for.
Right.
I was saving the best for last, and he joins us here in the Jaguars Today studios. What's going on? How are you?
Oh, I'm just enjoying it, man. This is a good time to be among such wonderful company.
You're
and,
so full
and,
of
to
it.
Hear, and to hear all the Dwayne Grotz jokes, I love it.
Well, and you worked with Jeff pretty closely for a long time, so you knew all his references to every comedian. I'm sure you know a whole bunch of other hillbilly comedians.
Well, I wasn't
too.
The only one pulling it out. Now, Chris was very good at that himself now.
Yeah. Well, I would sit in the booth while they were running it, and I would be dropping little liners and stuff. Yeah, but I knew all about Roy D. Mercer.
All right.
Yeah, he didn't have to have me tell him about R.D. Mercer.
I started laughing the moment he mentioned it, and you're going, oh, I don't know who
I got no idea. That's probably exactly what I saw. I don't know. Well, you know what? I guess I have a limited – how do I get through life? How do I get across the street, man? I've missed out on so much, I feel like, Tony.
Clearly.
I felt like I was a pretty well-rounded guy.
It's because you're so highbrow, man.
Is that what it is?
That's what it
is. We're just talking about how great the show The Walking Dead is. Is that highbrow? I don't think that's highbrow.
No, it's not highbrow.
It's not highbrow at all. Are you kidding me? All right. You know what? Highbrow, lowbrow, whatever you want to call it. Tom Coughlin J Fund has been a phenomenal enterprise that I think we assume most people know what it is. But in a nutshell, tell people what it is.
All right. The J Fund came about. Tom Coughlin was the coach of Boston College, and back in 1992 had a player named Jay McGillis. He really took a liking to Jay, just the kind of person he was, the kind of player he was, and Jay came down with leukemia. And it took his life in about 9 months, and Coach Coughlin got to see what that did, what kind of havoc it wreaked on Jay and on his family, financially, emotionally, and in practical aspects of his life too. And he made a promise to them that whenever he had the opportunity, that he would be able to help families tackling childhood cancer, that he would do it. And when he came down here to run the Jags, that's exactly what he did, and the J Fund was born.
I want to say last year was like the 20th anniversary of the J Fund.
We're getting there. We're coming close.
Is it just coming up on
the
okay.
First, yeah, the next May, the golf classic that we do will be the 20th annual golf classic.
It will be, okay.
Yeah, but 1996 was when it officially formed.
Because I know Tom brought a lot of the McGillis family down last year for some of the events, and I for some reason I thought it was an anniversary kind of thing, but regardless, we're very nice, great people, but the cause that Tom Coughlin started and continued in Jacksonville, which I think is a big key, obviously, even after he left, has impacted just tons of families here on the First Coast. How many families were diagnosed with childhood cancers in the last year?
Last year, in 2013, there were 96 families. 96 families in this area that had their lives completely turned upside down in the blink of an eye. And now understand that that's in a year. Now, in any given year, at any given moment, there are 250 families that are dealing with this today, right now, as we're talking, in this area. There are eight, whatever zip code you live in, there's an average of eight families that are dealing with it right now, today. I mean, it's pretty heavy duty stuff. You know, there's a tremendous need for help and assistance right now.
If I remember correctly, you know, cause, been involved in different aspects of the J Fund, because Tom and his daughter have been so gracious enough to invite me to be at some of those events. But it's so good because it doesn't focus so much on the child. Mm-hmm. As it does focus on the family to what they're basically trying to do is provide financial assistance to allow the family to concentrate on being a family and tending to the needs of the child.
Right. Yeah. Our mission is to be there for the family so that they can be there for the child. And so what that means is we supply financial, emotional, and practical support. That translates into gas cards. That translates into emergency financial assistance to pay the bills. So that they can take the time off of work. When you think about it, you put yourself in these shoes. When you find out that your child has been diagnosed with cancer, your life completely changes. It completely turns upside down, and that child has to have care. That means a doctor's visit. That means a half day off of work. Well, where's that money going to come from? You know? Well, as it turns out, for a lot of people, you think about 96, and we've been talking about giving a gift of $96 through this whole drive to the Radiothon. For a lot of people, that's an afternoon that they can be with their kid, and they don't have to worry about the money that they're going to miss coming out of their paycheck because of it. That's what the J Fund does.
Yeah, and look, you don't have to limit yourself to a $96 donation.
Absolutely.
But try to make it a nice, easy figure, or, you know, it may not be easy for everybody, but you can give less than that. You can give more than that. You can give whatever you want. But right now, if you do donate a gift of $96 by going to tcjfund.org and clicking on the blue donate button in the upper left-hand corner, what are you eligible to perhaps win?
Well, 1010XL has been really gracious about this, and they've put up four all-inclusive field seats and parking passes. The value of that is up just over $1,000, and that's for the Jaguars-Giants game on the 30th. So it makes sense because we've got the Radiothon on the 25th. And the
week from today.
Yes, and the whole theme of it is that we are thankful to be there. Thanksgiving, that Thursday, and then Tom Coughlin comes back to town, as part of the game on the 30th on that Sunday. So that's where those seats are.
And those are the field, the new seats that are right literally
on
the field. Right,
yes.
Which is an experience you really can't get anywhere else. So to be eligible to do that, just certainly go to tcjfund.org and click on the blue donate button. We encourage you to give a gift of $96 in honor of the 96 families that are newly struggling with this type situation.
And let me say that as part of this drive to the Radiothon, I know I've done this Radiothon and been fortunate enough to helm it for, gosh, this will be my sixth year. And I've seen the generosity and the heart of the 1010XL listeners for all these years. And so I know that that's the primary motivator. But I also know that with this incentive, that it kind of adds a nice little special touch to it. Please remember that the deadline to get in, to get your gift in is Thursday. And then we're going to be drawing the winner on Friday.
Right. If you want to be eligible for the passes, if you just want to donate, you can donate anytime.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be eligible for the drawing will take place Friday. So Thursday, what's the cutoff time? Do we have a time on
End of day Thursday.
End of day.
Yes.
So assume end of business day on Thursday,
yeah,
just to be safe.
Yeah. Or just do it now.
Do it right now. Right. Don't wait. But yeah, if you're somewhere in the car right now, you don't have the wherewithal to do it. TCJFund.org. That's TCJAYFUND. TCJFund.org. donatedbuck.org is the website. Click on the blue donate button. It'll take you through all the steps. Is there a goal, a financial goal that's been set, a bar that's been set this year for 1010XL?
Well, yes. We're looking to pull in excess of $60,000 this year.
What did we do last year?
54.
That's pretty good.
Yes.
60 would be better.
Yes, absolutely. And 61 or 65 or, you know, whatever.
Right. Happy to shatter the record.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, and, you know, and there's a reason for that, because the need keeps growing. We're up over 10% increase from last year, in terms of financial assistance requests. And the year's not even done yet. And we've had 28 requests in November alone. Which is astounding. About 8 days ago, we were at 12. So we've had 16 requests in the last 8 days.
There's people that need it right now.
And
every single
you
dollar.
Bet.
I don't know what the percentage is. Maybe you do, Chris.
I do.
What the percentage that goes to administrative, mm-hmm, compared to the percentage that is turned back over.
Yeah.
The administrative, which any organization, any charity is going to have some of those fees, is an incredibly small percentage.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of every $96 donation is actually used directly to help families?
93%.
93%. That is, honestly, you compare that to any charity in America, I think you're going to find that in a favorable light right there. And that 93%, call it, you know, 93 out of every $100,
yep,
affects families right here. Your neighbors, your maybe your family, maybe your loved ones, maybe people that you went to school with, whatever. It's all right here on the First Coast. That
absolutely
money's, it's not going to research. It's not going to, nope, awareness. It's going to help people, with the day to day coping, mm-hmm, with one of the most horrible pieces of news you could get.
Mm-hmm.
And, great story, as I think is every year we get to talk to so many of these survivors of this, you know, that, there are a lot of people that are doing a lot of good work on that. We're not trying to cure cancer. We're trying to alleviate the burden that comes with it.
Yeah.
Here the J Fund is, and we're just happy to help.
You know, and what's great is, you know, we see so many families and so many kids who survive it, who get through it, and they want to give back. They a lot of our volunteer base are people whom we had the pleasure of assisting at one point. We see a bunch. Matter of fact, our ambassador for Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, Marissa Ierna, we helped her family, and now she volunteers for us, and she's an amazing spokesperson. She's going to be helping out with the Radiothon too.
That's pretty awesome.
It is. It really, really is.
All right. So again, tcjfund.org. If you don't remember anything else today, remember that, please. TCJFund.org. Click on the donate button. If you can, donate a gift of $96 or more. We'd very happily accept anything that you're able to give, but a gift of $96 or more will qualify you to win the 4 all-inclusive field seats for the Jaguars-Giants game on November 30th. That includes a parking pass over a $1,000 value, and you can celebrate the Jags, hopefully winning a game, celebrate Tom Coughlin's return to Jags.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. First, some notable birthdays on this date. 1948, Jack Tatum, the assassin, right? Paralyzed Daryl Stingley with a hit, and as I recall,
legal hit.
But didn't Tatum just pass away like in the last year or so? I want to say, I believe he did. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading a story at the time, Tony. We were doing the show with Brent Martineau at the time,
mm-hmm,
and I want to say like he was. I understand the legality of the hit, but just like unrepentant, like his whole life, like, you know, just. It would have meant a lot to Stingley if Tatum had just reached out to him and said, hey, I'm sorry. Didn't do it on purpose, whatever. But you know, one of these guys that I guess just carried a personality chip right to the grave.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, you never want to see, you know, because at the end of the day in the NFL, you know, you do have your own teams and your own allegiances. But once it's all said and done, it's a fraternity. And you have to treat it as such. And it's a shame that axe was never buried.
This date, November 18th, 1956, happy birthday, Warren Moon was born. CFL superstar, NFL superstar, and may have thrown the prettiest ball of a good player. Jeff George threw a pretty ball, right? I mean, maybe as perfect a spiral as you'll ever see. But among good players, I think Warren Moon threw the prettiest deep ball,
and
certainly.
He's the reason why I got my first letter ever from the National Football League.
You hit him? You rough him up?
Well, I mean, back in the day when there was an interception, I mean, it was a race to see who could hit the quarterback.
Yes, yes.
And I remember we were playing the Houston Oilers in New York, and Warren threw an interception, and it was, you know, 35, 40 yards down the field, and Warren is just standing there watching the interception return. And so I peeled around from his blind side and basically did a big loop like a fish hook and came in and clocked him as he was just standing there watching the interception return. And then when he got up on one knee, I clocked him again. Because back then, that was it. I mean, you know, that was the free opportunity to put hits on a quarterback.
No question.
And I remember the following week, I got a letter from the league, even though it was legal hits, that they said that if it happens again, you will be subject to a fine. First letter I ever got from the league.
How about that?
Yep.
Well, did it ever happen again?
It did in the radio booth. Because Warren works for the Seahawks. You know, now he's the
color analyst
for the Seattle Seahawks and actually came up and blindsided him again one time when we were playing the Seattle Seahawks and, you
nicely
know, obviously
done.
Doing what I'm doing now. And I said, that's just payback. I said, I'm giving it to you again. He remembers it very well.
Well played. This date, 1964, happy birthday, Seth Joyner, our runner-up at one point for NFL Defensive Player of the Year.
Great player.
Went out as Super Bowl champ with Denver in 99. His final game was winning that Super Bowl. We remember Elway, Seth Joyner, was a very good player, great player, however you want to term it. And
he could really do it all. He was probably the most athletically gifted linebackers that I've ever seen. In fact, it was the winter of 1992. Seth was in, you remember the old Superstars?
Oh, absolutely.
That used to have on ABC?
Absolutely.
I did the Superstars in the winter of 1992. And Seth Joyner was also a participant in the Superstars, you know, contest. And a great guy, great athlete, and watching him in Superstars competition, there wasn't anything that he couldn't do.
I love Superstars. Superstars was phenomenal. You could never do it today. Because there'd be 1,000 clauses in the contract. And
that was pretty cool because back in that year that I did it, it was me, Christian Okoye, Seth Joyner, Mike Powell, Rocket Ishmael, Steve Berline.
Rocket Ishmael's birthday is today, too.
Yeah, I think it was Rocket Ishmael back then. I mean, it was pretty cool to participate in an event like that with some of the great athletes across all sports.
All right, this date in 1990, Art Monk became only the third player in NFL history to amass 700 career receptions when he made 4 catches against the Saints. The previous two that beat him to a mark, Steve Largent, who was the record holder at the time, and Charlie Joyner, who Largent had passed at the time. There are now, I believe it's 43 guys that are in the stratosphere of 700 catches or more. Today's pop quiz.
All right,
before you get to
the pop quiz, because Art Monk finished his last year in New York with me when I was in New York. And there was never a guy. I had the great opportunity to play with a couple guys when they were towards the end. Ronnie Lott, Art Monk being one of them, Leonard Marshall. And watching Art Monk conduct himself in a professional fashion, the way that he was always the first one out to practice, the last one to leave, catching balls at the jugs machine, getting extra running in, even at that stage of his career, it was epic to watch.
Art Monk finished his career currently 14th, but was higher, obviously, when he finished. He was number one at the time. 940 receptions for Art Monk. There are, as I said, 43 players that have 700 or more receptions in the National Football League. 11 of them are active. 3 strikes is what you get. How many of the 11 can you guys name between you? Who do you got? This should be easy. This is cake.
Of active guys?
Active guys with 700 catches or more.
Reggie Wayne
has 1,053. Yeah. Tops the list.
Anquan Boldin.
Anquan Boldin is fourth with 913.
Former teammate Larry Fitzgerald.
Larry Fitzgerald, 892.
Andre Johnson,
982 is number two on the list.
Steve Smith
is right behind Fitz with 885. I knew you guys would kill this. What else you got?
Brandon Marshall.
Brandon Marshall. Very good. 761 receptions for Brandon Marshall and still going strong. You got
on a ton, and I'll go Jason Witten.
Jason Witten is 16th all time with 918. There's another tight end on the list. I'll give you that clue.
Oh, Gates.
Antonio Gates, 757. Yep. There is a member of the NFC South, an NFC South receiver that is on this list.
Roddy White.
Roddy White. He got Roddy. Julio's not there yet.
Roddy White.
The last one, I don't know if you'll get him, but you got, well, there are two more.
But the great Gazoo's on there, Wes.
Now, Wes Welker is 21st overall, 871, and the last guy, since you got 10 for 10 there, I'll give you Santana Moss for free at 722. That would have been a tough one, right? That would have been a tough pull. But very nice. Joey Galloway is the last guy, the lowest guy, 701 receptions. That's pretty good for
a
guy.
Was he the White Panther? Is that what Gruden called him? Was it the White Panther? He was like, you never see him in the wild, but every now and then he shows up and it's amazing.
Joey Galloway?
Yeah.
He was amazing when he was healthy. He had that ridiculous game against Jacksonville.
Wasn't Bill Parcells the one who kind of called him out when he was in New England?
Did he? I don't know. Yeah, maybe he did. You're talking about Galloway or you're talking about Terry Glenn?
Terry Glenn, that's who he called out.
Yeah. Same school.
Yeah.
Those Ohio State guys all need calling out, apparently. The state in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville, their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product for you at a competitive price with unsurpassed customer service. Give them a call for a professional free estimate at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. A quick look now at the drive around the NFL.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Pittsburgh Steelers and Tennessee Titans wrapped up Week 11 action in the NFL last night on Monday Night Football. The Titans took a 17-13 lead into halftime thanks to an 80-yard touchdown pass from Zach Mettenberger to Nate Washington with 40 seconds left in the half. So you aren't the only team to have made that kind of mistake at the end of the half this year, Jags fans. But thanks to the running of Le'Veon Bell, the Steelers completely controlled the game in the fourth quarter, outscoring the Titans 14-0 in that frame for the 27-24 win. Bell wound up with 204 yards on 33 carries, including a fourth quarter touchdown. With the win, the Steelers improved to 7-4 going into the bye, a half game behind Cincinnati in the AFC North, who sit at 6-3-1. Those two teams will play two times in the last 5 weeks of the season. And there is real locker room drama developing in the NFC West. Yesterday, we talked about the situation in Seattle between the Seahawks and running back Marshawn Lynch. Their arch rivals, the San Francisco 49ers, are dealing with an issue of their own. Linebacker Ahmad Brooks played in only two series on Sunday against the New York Giants before pulling himself out of the game. Why? Alden Smith returned for the 49ers this week, and Brooks, who's been solid all year and healthy, didn't like seeing his playing time reduced to make way for Smith to come back into the lineup. 49ers coach Jim Harbaugh after the game simply said, quote, "We're working through something." Brooks confirmed that he is healthy and that the two sides were working through something but wouldn't comment any further about it after the game.
TC was coaching you back in the mid-90s, Jeff, and you told Tom you didn't like your playing time, so therefore you were taking a seat for the rest of the game. How would that have been handled?
He probably would have lost his mind. I remember the funny story I ever had with Tom Coughlin. We were in the preseason in 1995, and you know, typically the starters played, you know, the first quarter, maybe into the second quarter, depending on which game it was in the preseason. And one of the preseason games became tight. And he wanted to reinsert the starters at the very end. In a preseason game to get the victory. And he goes to me and he says, "You ready to go back in?" Well, I mean, you know, tape was off the wrist, you know, the shoulder pads were loosened up. You know, they told me I was done. And I said, "You really want me to go back in?" And he says, "Oh, aren't you ready?" And I said, "I will be." That's the response you got to have. You need me, I'm ready to go.
There you go. Well, did he put you back in?
No.
Good.
He thought about it for a minute, and he's like, "What am I doing?"
Right. It's a preseason game. Even TC knew at the time. All right, we got to take a break. Come back, 641-1010. Got a couple calls on the line. We will get to you. Who's your boy, R.D. Mercer? Is that
R.D. Mercer.
That's the guy with the prank phone calls?
Yeah.
I think we might have a little sampling of that coming your way as well. Plus, the latest on Adrian Peterson. Big news coming out on him today as well. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Wagman, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Blue collar man, Tony, because I think the theme is the Jags are under a lot of pressure. Like a blue collar man?
I guess. I don't know.
Working hard to get a victory this week?
Hot under the collar.
They're hot under the collar. All right.
And also, eventually, once we get to our little prank call, blue collar kind of fits in there with that, too.
Okay. It's Ron D. Mercer, or as Jeff knows him as R.D., because they're good like that. They're pals like
they're
that.
They're down.
They're down. We'll talk. We'll hear a little snippet of that coming up right now. Maybe it's the Giants game. Maybe it's going to be another one. I'm not sure which tickets we're going to give away for this yet, but Foundation Professionals of Florida has the photo contest still ongoing on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, facebook.com Jaguars Today. Post a picture in the thread, which is pinned to the top of the page, and it just has to fit the theme, Jaguars Passion. And you're automatically entered into the drawing for a pair of tickets to a future Jaguar home game here in 2014. Just so you don't think I'm trying to trick you into saying that. I'll get you in 2019. Trust me, it'll be all right. Foundation Professionals of Florida, your full-service foundation repair company. You got to know the symptoms. If you've got issues at the house, exterior or interior wall cracks, windows and doors sticking, foundation cracks, sloping floors, it could be all symptoms of a more serious situation. Call Foundation Professionals of Florida at 287-2690 for that peace of mind, or visit foundationprosfl.com. Now, we haven't talked this morning about maybe the biggest piece of NFL news probably today, which is the Adrian Peterson situation. I know you left it out of the drive around the NFL, Tony, because we're going to give it a little time of its own here.
Yeah.
The NFL has decided to suspend Adrian Peterson for the remainder of the season. I guess open-ended, but at least for the remainder of the season, he's eligible to apply for reinstatement next April. The NFLPA says they will appeal that decision, and there are reports, at least one report, that an unnamed NFL executive, who knows if that's a person in position to know, an authority, whatever, indicated to the NFLPA or to Peterson's representatives that he would previously, that he would be given credit for, quote, time served, basically, for the fact that he was on the commissioner's exempt list. He was collecting a paycheck, but he couldn't play since week one. That doesn't seem to have been the case. Whether it ever was the case, who knows? Demoris Smith, you know, is, as he should, is the union leader, is, you know, once again up in arms about the, as he describes it, uneven, discipline. And he described the NFL as making it up as they go along when it comes to discipline. Does he have a case, when it comes to that particular point, Jeff?
Absolutely.
I think he does too.
Absolutely. And right now, the league does not have a lot of credibility. You know, with the whole Ray Rice fiasco, where is the credibility? And I think that what's going to come out of this with the whole Ray Rice thing and the Adrian Peterson thing and then the Greg Hardy thing is to get control of all of the discipline out of the commissioner's hands to where you get some other party that's neutral, that's making those decisions. And I think that that's the way it should be, because I think that that will provide a little bit of consistency, and at least the getting of the facts and all the information is the most important thing, so that you can get at the truth. And I think that a lot of times, going all the way back to Bountygate, did we ever feel like that we got the truth in that? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, when you had the Spygate situation and the commissioner said nothing happened, then he destroyed all the tapes.
Under the rug, yeah.
He destroyed all the evidence so nobody could take a look and judge for themselves whether anything useful had been happened. There's a great level of distrust between the players and the commissioner.
Well, and that's always been that way.
Not to this degree.
But not to this degree. And because it, you know, things really changed, I think, drastically when Roger Goodell took over as far as the levels of discipline that were handed down.
Absolutely.
And I think that there's got to be some type of control. And I've had numerous conversations with Roger Goodell. I like Roger Goodell. I think he's been absolutely wonderful for the National Football League. And I like the way that he has instituted a, look, we're not going to put up with any garbage anymore from players as far as off-the-field transgressions. I think that that was much needed. But now that that's happened, I think that there needs to be some level of control to that. And I think that because of all these events and the mistrust, and also from the public mistrust in this situation, it's going to end up forcing the changes that are have been needed for quite some time.
Yeah, and I think that one of the main things is he is the guy, you appeal his decisions to him.
Yeah, which is not fair.
Right, there's no oversight whatsoever in the process whatsoever. It's not like he's the last line of defense. He is the second to last and the last line. So he rules, then you can appeal to him and say, well, you got your ruling wrong. Would you care to change it? On occasion, he has, if new evidence has been presented, but the system is inherently one I think if you were a player, you would find unfair as well. That doesn't mean that they're right on all their points of contention with the commish, but we'll move on from that for the moment so we can get some of these calls in with you. 641-1010 is the number. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. Dave, thanks for hanging on the line. You're up next on Jaguars Today.
Hey, guys. Papa G here, man. Listen, I love the show, and I appreciate you letting me join in. I'll be quick because I know you're kind of up against it. I want to talk about Grotz, but and I'll listen to this one off the air after I hang up. But But Logs, thanks for the memories, man. And you said that was your first letter from the NFL when you lowered the boom on Moon. It'd be interesting to see how many of those letters you got, and if that was your only letter. But anyway, getting back to Grotz, you know, when all this blows over, man, maybe he'll get a taste for bratwurst, and we'll hear next season about brats. But in the meantime, dude, you're kind of in a sticky situation here, man. And listen, I need your A game every week. I'd hate to see you end up on the bubble. Have a great day.
too obvious.
That's good, though.
Too many too obvious right there. As far as Grotz goes, just in terms of how he's played this year, disappointment to you based on what you expected? Typical second-year growing pains?
No,
how do you look at
it? I think disappointing. I mean, he's had moments where he's looked really good, but I think overall you wanted to see him, you know, now that he has been healthy for the most part, to be able to take another step up in year two. You know, I think you could probably say that for a couple different guys. You know, Jonathan Cyprian, I think, is a guy that, you know, drafted him almost nearly first round grade. Teams had on,
sure,
you know, high second round. You know, in year two, did he really take a step up? You know, because they got better up front now. I mean, they're better up front in the front seven. The number of sacks have gone up. The amount of pressure that they've created has gone up. So you would think that in turn, his level of play would reflect that up front, and his level of play would also be able to go up. I don't know if you could say that. You could probably almost say that he's been about the same, if not maybe just a little bit, you know, down from
right.
last year. Because, I mean, there were some plays that he was making last year that I remember sitting there highlighting, whether it'd been on Film Room Friday or on the Monday night television show, going, wow, look at this by Jonathan Cyprian. I don't think I've highlighted one play by Jonathan Cyprian yet this year. I mean, really.
That's pretty telling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, I have not had one play that I've highlighted said, look at Jonathan Cyprian on this play.
Why is that? You think just, is there,
I mean, I don't know.
You think he's a talented guy,
obviously.
I think
he's got a lot of talent. But his biggest thing, physically, he's got all the tools. Physically, he's got all the tools. Can make tackles. He's got the speed. He's got the range. The biggest thing that I see that he's lacking in his game, and Tony Baselli and I were talking about this a little bit last night on Jaguars Monday, because the point was brought up by Pete Prisco that, you know, it appears that Jonathan Cyprian takes bad angles. Well, a player that sometimes takes bad angles typically does not have the awareness. In other words, he doesn't have the awareness on route awareness that makes him or allows him to take proper angles to a play. And so I think it's an awareness issue with Jonathan Cyprian. And a lot of times with a very young secondary and a young team, you have to learn the game from your coach, but you also have to be able to learn the offense from your coach and from experience. And with a veteran presence, which they've never really had in that secondary, with the exception of Alan Ball, is that you don't really understand the game, I think, as much as you would like a young player to understand it, because he's not having the extra coaching from a veteran presence in the entire secondary. You know, because, I mean, most teams, if you have four guys in the secondary, you have one rookie that's starting, and then you have three veterans, and the veterans really teach you awareness and watching film and everything else that goes along with a week's preparation. With Dwayne Grotz, it's been Alan Ball with a whole room, and then are all young players,
right,
with the exception of Will Blackman.
Right.
You know, so that's the thing that he has to get better at, is awareness on every play. Because you watch guys like Ed Reed. I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, Ed Reed is like the norm, because he wasn't.
Sure.
But Polamalu and Ed Reed and all the great safeties in the game, all of a sudden it seems like they're around every play. Well, it looks like they're around every play because even though they're taking care of their responsibility, they're cheating in their mind and cheating in their drops, etc., to anticipate something that they see that is coming. And you're not seeing that from Jonathan Cyprian yet, and that's the thing that he has to elevate in his level of play.
A couple breaking news items, at least one. Ben Tate has been released, waived by the Cleveland Browns, so he will hit waivers. I've already gotten some Jaguar fans asking if the Jags put in a claim on him. I doubt it, but
not with the contract that he got. I mean, I don't see.
It was what, 2 years?
Was it a 2-year deal? But it was still what, several million a year?
He got.
He was like 3.5.
Yeah, it was like he was guaranteed basically 2.5 this year, and I think next year was around 2 or 3, something like that. It wasn't even a mega
wasn't a monster deal.
And also more details, right? More details coming out on the LeGarrette Blount situation last night for Monday Night Football, where he left the sideline for the Steelers
in the fourth quarter.
During the fourth quarter of the game, reports coming out of the locker room now that he tried to get dressed and leave before the team even got in there. So some real stories going on with running backs in this league right now. We talked about Marshawn Lynch and what happened with him on Sunday, LeGarrette Blount last night, Ben Tate waived today. Obviously, Adrian Peterson and his situation overshadowing all of those things, but it's an interesting day and age to be a running back in the National Football
League. Yeah, the stories out of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette indicate Blount's been an issue there, that players have approached Tomlin to get rid of the guy over the last month or so, and we're talking about
the new diva position.
I don't think so, but it certainly this year could make a good run at that title.
It's a position to be a diva. I mean, the league is basically saying, if we don't like your attitude, we'll just walk away from it.
Right.
We don't have to put up with it. We don't invest enough in the position to put up with it.
It's interesting that the top two free agent running backs, you know, Ben Tate, Toby Gerhart. Ben Tate's been released, and Toby Gerhart is now a role player backup.
Right. Third string. And Blount might have been third. Back,
and Blount, honestly, might have been the third running back on the free agent market.
Well, you've always wondered about Blount, because he at Oregon, he got in trouble for the fight where he punched a Boise State player on the field and got suspended, was undrafted, as in part because of a result of that. The Titans brought him in, put him on the practice squad. The Bucs signed him as a rookie. He's a 1,000-yard runner. Then they basically gave him away for Jeff Demps, who, you know, is a track guy. I don't know how interested he is even in playing football. But they gave him away for Jeff Demps in a deal with New England. He was the best running back in the second half of the season for the Patriots last year, shredding people at times. He could play. I think LeGarrette Blount can play, but clearly he's got some personality issues because he keeps kicking around. The only interest I can recall in free agency was from Pittsburgh, who signed him as a backup.
Kind of surprised, too, that Pittsburgh has put up with him for this long, because you have a fantastic young running back in Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
And then Blount and Bell had the issue.
Got caught with a pot in the car.
Yeah,
right.
Got caught with that. And then, you know, so very surprising that the Pittsburgh Steelers acquired a guy like that, first and foremost, because that doesn't fit the Pittsburgh Steelers' M.O. That fits more of the old Oakland Raiders' M.O.
Right, the old Pittsburgh Steelers' M.O. would just be get a bunch of guys on steroids. But allegedly, I'm just saying.
You love taking your shots at that city.
What, me? No. So anyway, Ben Tate, free man, maybe Indy. Indy report came out today that they were asked about it because Chuck Pagano used to be in Baltimore. Would you consider Ray Rice if he got reinstated? They said no interest.
No, but they would have interest in Ben Tate because they saw Ben Tate last year 2 times.
Sure.
You know, so you got a lot of familiarity, and I'm sure there's been a lot of study that has been done, and the Indianapolis Colts feel like that they're a team that's going to be able to compete for not only a division title, but to compete for a Super Bowl. And if you're them and you just lost a veteran back, and the back that you have that's still on your roster that you gave up first round pick for is not all that great, why wouldn't you take a good, long, hard look at Ben Tate?
Yeah, and they may. In fact, he's 26 years old, so still, from that standpoint, should have plenty of tread left on the proverbial tires, but whether it's effective tread or not.
Well, I can tell you that. I can tell you that Ben Tate is a better back than Trent Richardson right now. So to me, they're
crazy. You wonder what was going on there in Cleveland too, because it's not like the money that is due to him the rest of the year is prohibitive. His actual base salary this year is $1 million. Most of the money he's made this year has already been paid. Mm-hmm. But he's averaging 3.1 yards a carry, so he's certainly not been very effective.
Well, he had a knee injury earlier in the year, too, that he missed, I think, about 3 games.
Right, but even when healthy, he's had one 100-yard game this year. He's fallen to third on the depth chart, but to outright release him, to me, I wonder if there's not another issue going on, as there often is, that we don't know about at the time.
Yeah, behind the scenes, something
right.
happening.
Just curious as to how that whole thing's working out. Don't know. Maybe just the fact that they feel like, you know what, they can do better.
I want to say this. Ben Tate, don't put him in the category of LeGarrette Blount.
I'm not saying he is. Right. I don't know Ben Tate from Adam. LeGarrette Blount's got a rep. Don't know enough about Ben Taylor, but in this particular circumstance, who knows? If he was disgruntled, he thought he was brought in to be the starter. He's been bypassed for a, you know, a rookie and a, and an undrafted rookie.
Yeah, they got two good rookies on that team.
Right. So, but, who knows what the circumstance is, but, I know this. We got
to maybe they're
going to
promote Johnny Football to running back.
To running back. Possibly.
You know,
right?
Get him on the field.
He's the story of the National Football League. All the cameras that are in Cleveland on a daily basis,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
What happened to that? I guess you got to play to have those
cameras
show up.
Follow them now because they're 6-4.
True, but I doubt there are as many as people. I don't think they're there for Johnny Football.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. They went from first place to last place with one single loss this week, as a matter of fact. Coming up, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, where we ask you who is the most underappreciated Jaguar based on their performance on the field in 2014, plus your boy, R.D. Mercer.
Yeah.
Did I get it right? He's coming up as well. Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Longman, Fat Tony here with you, along with Lauren Brooks, Joe Fortunato. Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Automobile Dealerships. Today, asking you who is the most underappreciated Jaguar so far in 2014. Tony, what kind of feedback have we gotten?
Here's what we got from Paolo. I'd say Luke Belenko for not messing up with the snaps. From Eric, I really think it's Belenko. You don't hear his name much, and he's playing well. From Matt, he said Roy Miller. He's had a very good season so far, allowing Marks to get through to the quarterback. From brother Jason, Ryan Davis, Ryan Davis, Ryan Davis. No doubt about it. Jag's most consistent pass rusher. He deserves a bigger role. From at Irish Jaguar. In general, I'd say it's either Linder or Belenko. Offensive line never gets any attention unless it's bad. From let's see here. From Cam, we got Demetrius McCray, seventh-round pick. Goes up against Dez Bryant, makes him shift over to the other side. And from Christoph, Brandon Linder. So a lot of love there for the offensive line.
Yeah, I thought it's interesting how many good candidates there are, I think, for the answer to this question. Just a quick sampling from Facebook. Matthew Ryan went with Austin Pastor for holding down the right tackle spot and pointing out they couldn't run at all when he was out at the beginning of the year. A couple of votes more for Belenko. Will Ta'afoa? Will T?
Yeah.
Did I get that close?
Well, we just call him Foe.
Foe. All right. Was that in the ballpark, though? What do you think?
Will Ta'afoa.
Will Ta'afoa. Mm-hmm. Will Ta'afoa.
I mean, you'll have to, the last O is not emphasized, Ta'afoa. But I just did that. Because a lot of people will say Will Ta'afoa.
Right.
It's Will Ta'afoa.
Will Ta'afoa. Okay. Got a couple votes for him.
I think he is underappreciated. I mean, he's an excellent fullback. He is a good receiving option coming out of the field. But I'm going to go with what most people have said, and I give credit to a lot of these people because I think their observations are spot on. Luke Belenko, Brandon Linder, to me, Ryan Davis, those three, outstanding.
You may not be used to the class of listeners that comes with 1010XL Sports Radio, pal, but we've got a pretty savvy audience.
That's pretty strong.
No, I thought you were right. I thought even Ryan Davis is a guy who's made a lot of plays, but maybe not appreciated enough for what he's done this year.
For a defensive end and a guy of his stature, you know, which we're talking, you know, 6'3", 265 pounds, 6'2", 260, 65 pounds, somewhere in that range. For him to have the ability to rush the passer as a three technique and be effective as he is tremendous. I mean, there's not very many defensive ends that can put their hand down on the ground and get down in a three technique where we always say it gets very noisy and is good. I mean, I'm talking Ryan Davis is good. If you leave him one-on-one, the chances of him winning are very high. And as far as number of wins per pass rush play, the effectiveness, he's the best the Jaguars have.
All right, there you go. A sampling of the underappreciated, courtesy of the Tom Bush Family of Automobile Dealerships. Here in, you can head over to Tom Bush Volkswagen on Atlantic Boulevard to see for yourself the 2015 Motor Trend Car of the Year, the Volkswagen Golf, and take advantage of the sign and drive event. Zero do-it signing, zero down, zero first month's payment, and zero deposit. Or take advantage of the BMW's holiday credit of up to $3,500 or drive away in a 2015 BMW X1 S-Drive or 2015 BMW 3201 for only $279 a month for a 39-month lease. Visit TomBush.com for more information the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. All right, let's get Jim in quickly, and then we'll hear from your boy, R.D. Mercer, coming up. Hi, Jim. You're on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Just a real quick question for Jeff. His first reaction to we've seen coaches hint at players, but I've never seen a first-year coach come out and rip into one of his players like Jay Gruden did with RG3, and I just was curious as to Jeff's reaction. You guys have a great day. Thanks.
Thanks.
Doesn't surprise me one bit. You probably remember us talking about RG3 all the way back pre-Redskins game and some of my commentary on him about how he carries himself, how he handles himself. It's just downright wrong. I mean, if I were a player in the locker room and had to be a teammate of RG3's over the last couple of years, it would make me sick to listen to some of his commentary. And I think what Jay Gruden did was much needed. In other words, RG3 needs to have a little bit of humility.
Little reality check.
Yes, yeah. Because he thinks he's great, and he's not. He had a tremendous rookie year where he played the quarterback position based purely upon athleticism, and that was it. He never learned to play the position, but he thought that he was already there, and he's got a lot to learn. And the only way to get a player to be able to improve is for him to recognize his weaknesses. You've heard Gus Bradley talk about that all the time, that you have to be able to identify your weaknesses so that you have the ability to work on them and make them more of a strength. And RG3, his personality makeup, what he said after the game last week where he's talking about a quarterback can't do his job unless the other 10 guys are doing their job. Well, wait a minute. You're the most impactful position on the entire offense. If you're better, you make everybody else better. And so for him to make that commentary wearing that crazy hat, and I don't know where he got that from.
I think he got it from Garrard's like leftover closet. I mean, that's right, Dave.
Come on.
I said it.
You know, so I think it was, it's not very common that you would see a head coach do that, but I think in this case, it was needed. It was needed in a big way, and I think it was needed in a way to make RG3 recognize the importance of how he has been acting and how it has to be going forward. Because RG3 has no support in that locker room. None at all.
All right, there you go. Thank you for the call, Jim. Been waiting for this ever since he was brought up early in the program. Artie Mercer. If you're like me, if you've never heard of or heard Artie Mercer, here's a sampling of what we've all been missing.
Terry, listen, my name is Roy Mercer. I understand you're a photographer here in Durant.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I got a kind of a situation I was wondering if you could help me out with. I got a, my boy Raymond is in the FFA and he had a goat that he raised. We called it General Custer because, you know, he had that little goatee there. And Custer, and he won a pretty pet contest. But I need to get that goat's picture took. We need a picture before we can win the contest outright.
Uh-huh.
And, but the bad part about it is, Terry, that General Custer passed away last night.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it
so
was.
So you take a picture of your goat dead?
Well, I don't want him to look dead is the thing.
Okay.
But I, it ain't funny. It's a family pet, kind of, and my boy, you know, he's all tore up about it because we got about $500 first prize and some kitchen appliances coming to, you know, won this thing. But I was wondering, he's starting to stiffen up a little bit. We throwed him, man, it ain't funny. We throwed him over the clothesline pole last night so his legs would hang straight down. So when it stiffed up, then he'd just be standing. Would that be all right?
I don't think I could make him look living. That's the problem.
Well, what would it take? Because I've been brushing his fur out a little bit and tried to floof it up a little bit. Could you maybe do something with his eyes? Because they kind of glazed over and maybe you'd brighten them.
All right, there you go. Where my life has been incomplete up until now.
You got to listen to some of the stuff where he gets people very angry,
uh-huh,
and then starts threatening to come down there and be physical. It's hilarious.
I'm a big fan of the prank call genre, if you will.
I got a feeling we have like an "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou" disconnect here again.
Maybe.
You didn't like that movie?
I've never watched that movie. I've watched parts of it. I think from what I've seen,
there's some people, Jeff, and
I don't get it
because I grew up down south and not. Like that kind of humor and kind of where Oh Brother plays off of a lot.
First of all, the soundtrack is tremendous.
It is. But there are a lot of people I know that grew up north that just can't watch it. They're like, this is just annoying to me. And I'm like, nope, this is hilarious.
No,
I'm sorry that you don't get it.
I mean, who doesn't appreciate a movie where one of the main characters is actually a hair product called Dapper Dan?
That's right.
I guess
Dapper
me.
Dan.
My hand's up right
Ain't
now.
Ain't this place a geographical oddity?
All right. Well, I'm really sorry I waited 45 years to hear that scintillating Artie Mercer commentary right there.
That was not his best.
I feel more complete.
The best one is the cemetery where he calls the actual cemetery keeper about somebody that supposedly went down there and urinated on his granddaddy's grave, and that he wanted something done about it.
Well, I will endeavor to find that on YouTube tonight.
Imagine how you would even
and give Artie a second
hard.
Chance.
Hey, oh my goodness!
Before we wrap up, Jeff, thanks to Chris Wayne for coming in, and remember to go to tcjfund.org and make a donation. If you do it by the close of business, a $96 donation to the J Fund by Thursday close of business, you're in the running for the drawing for 4 field seat tickets to the Jags Giants with parking included, over $1,000 value for that. So we encourage you to do that whether you win anything or not. It's just a good cause and it helps the folks here on the First Coast. Final 15 seconds. Jags puncher's chance this week against Indy?
Absolutely.
You like the circumstances?
Indianapolis is a good football team, but I think personnel-wise they're not a great football team. They just have a young quarterback that's playing very well with some explosive players at the wide receiver position and the receiving position, because I consider Kobe Fleener in that category. But absolutely, I think this is a game that it's not going to be 30-0 at halftime, I can tell you that.
It would make the last month and a half of the season get off to a tremendous start and flip the feeling around the football team from the outside. I think inside they're still incredibly positive, considering everything that they've been through record-wise. But that'll do it for us today. I know a little bit more than 2 hours ago when I started. On a variety of
subjects
today.
You always learn. Tuesdays with Jeff, we always
learn. You always learn.
You know all about Ron White, okay?
I don't know all about him.
R.D. Mercer and Rutt.
And floofing it up.
And Rutt.
Yeah, floof that hair up. And Rutt. And the deer Rutt is on in full bloom right now. I knew what the Rutt was. I just didn't know it was on right now. Now I do. All right? There's fewer living animals in the neighborhood when Jeff Logman gets a few days off. Yes. Oh, tonight. What do we got? Fat Tuesday?
Fat Tuesday's tonight. It's actually still called the Fat Tony.